The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Celebrate Columbus Day, but now we celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day. First off, let's define indigenous, the native people, original inhabitants. Living on every single continent, then somebody shows up and says, I discovered it. How can you discover somewhere already found, or take credit for a place that's already around, like Hernan Cortez or Hernando de Soto, Ponce de Leon or Francisco Pizarro? It all started with Christopher Columbus, Europe's obsession with Western discovering, with big dreams, it's while an Italian was searching for gold in the East Indies Islands. Long ago, 1492, we all know the story, he sailed the ocean blue. But here's what I didn't learn in school. After landing in the Bahamas, he treated people cruel. The Tainos are peaceful people in Cuba, Haiti, DR, Jamaica, Puerto Rico. Even though they welcomed him with open arms, he committed genocide and unspeakable evil. I wish that's where the story ends, but colonization is a sickness that spreads. Speaking of sickness, literal diseases, smallpox, chickenpox, and the measles. I wonder how history would change if explorers were peaceful when they came, learned native customs, cultural exchange, didn't force religion, and no one was enslaved. Aztecs, Incas might have lived longer from South America to Canadian borders. Cherokee, Sioux, Apache, and Navajo, Iroquois, Chippewa, Choctaw, Pueblo. The list goes on. So many tribes, so many stories, so many lives. Show love to the indigenous ones, from ancestors to those still alive. Sing!
One earth, one people, one love. 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 One earth, one people, one love.
So thank you for watching Mr. Harold's Music Class. Until next time, peace, love, and shabam.
One earth, one people, one love. The refrain is so simple, right? It's just, what, six words? Three repeated? One earth, one people, one love. What if it was that easy to feel that? Because that sounds so difficult too, right? Our culture, our history, our identities, our differences build up these divisions, these separations, and it's easy to think of those who are inside our group and those who are outside our group, whether that group is age, sex, gender, physical ability, the sport team affiliation we have, physical appearance, family background, political persuasion, right? All these categories which we put ourselves into and others out of, which define us and them in and out. What if we were truly one earth, one people with one love? Here at Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, we strive for promoting unity. We strive to promote love. This congregation's vision statement begins, "We seek to be a caring, growing, inclusive spiritual congregation promoting tolerance and understanding." That's something I want to be part of. That's something I want to be part of. I want to be part of a caring community that promotes tolerance, that promotes understanding. And that's one of the reasons that we're here this and every Sunday we come. Our congregation exists in order to help heal the world, to create opportunities for personal and communal growth, to open up the doors to transformation in our hearts so we can open up the doors for one earth, one people, one love. And if you're here last night at the Transylvania Twist Drag Bingo Extravaganza, that's exactly what we were doing. We were being one people together, one earth, one love. And if you want actual Transylvania facts, this is a Transylvanian stole. We can talk about it at brunch later. No vampires, but yes, Unitarians. I am Reverend Andrew L. Weber, and I serve here as minister among ministers, as seeker among seekers, as guide among guides. We come together to share our truths, to find comfort from others, to find challenge from others. Welcome to this religious home where your truth is important, where the person next to you's truth is important, right? Welcome to this community where we expect you to be true to yourself, to be true and authentic in covenant to each other, living with everyone's authentic selves. Welcome to this place where you're expected to make mistakes, to be authentic, to grow, to change. Welcome to your fellowship, made holy and hallowed by your presence here. We begin our service as Unitarian Universalists do across the country and around the globe this morning by lighting our flaming chalice, the symbol of our free faith. I've been asking congregational groups to come up and light our chalice each week. And if you're part of a group, they're like, hold on, you didn't ask me yet. Just let me know and I will ask you. Today, the membership team is going to kindle our flame. And the membership team, whomever's here, you can, yeah, come up. I'm going to talk for a little bit, but you can stand up here, Lindy. Yeah. And anyone else who wants to come from the membership team can join her. You don't have to. The membership team is a group of volunteers who make sure that people who walk in our doors feel welcome and know how to be involved. They do both the spiritual and logistical work of nurturing, sustaining our membership, which actually brings me to a part of talking about what it means to be part of Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. In the welcome, I said that you required only to believe what you must believe. Those beliefs will and do vary from one person to the next. What we do agree on is how we live together with each other, with compassion. We do not have a shared statement of belief. We have a shared covenant of action, a promise that we will be kind to each other, we will be kind to ourselves, and when we make mistakes, because we will make mistakes, that we come back again to that compassion for ourselves and for each other. So we're going to read together our covenant of good relations as the membership team lights our chalice. So please join with me, reflecting on what these words mean in our lives. We covenant to listen to each person carefully and respectfully, honor the inherent worth and dignity of everyone, show care and compassion for each other, our community, and our environment. Voice concerns and disagreements honestly and respectfully. Measure our behavior by the principles of Unitarian Universalism. In times of disagreement or conflict, it goes on. This is the hard part. In times of disagreement or conflict, we covenant to recognize the conflict and seek resolution directly and in a timely manner. Respect and honor the ideas of others. Encourage all to express their point of view. Practice tolerance, patience, and openness in the process. Work toward the common good of the fellowship. Amen. At Thomas Paine, we light and kindle a second flame each Sunday. This one showing our need for peace, our striving, our desire, our hope, and our work for peace in our hearts and for peace in the wider world. Please respond with the words on the screen. May peace be with us. Thank you. Our hymns today, I try to use one hymnal a Sunday. Sometimes they're both, but today I'm mainly using the teal hymnal. If you want a hymnal, they're in the back. You don't need one, but I like holding something. I like looking at the music. The lyrics will also be on the screen. So I encourage everyone to rise in body or in spirit to sing together our gathering hymn, which is 1013. Open my heart. As we look at the topic of compassion today, I'm going to be sort of zooming in and out, back and forth between macro and micro, between our personal lives and culture, between history and future. So you'll see me take different points of view and look back and forth. Our hymn reflected on sort of personal compassion. Let me be part of the love that you give. The covenant we read together talks about our shared compassion in this community, of how we're going to act with one another, even when we have differences of opinion. And our prelude spoke about our culture's compassion. Hold on a second, Andrew, but that prelude was about what Columbus and other explorers did that didn't sound very compassionate. I mean, like genocide, right? That's not compassionate. No. True, but here's the thing, that's truth-telling. When he was looking back at history, he was using compassion, saying, this is what happened, this is what happened to the native people, and now maybe we can go forward with more compassion, seeing past mistakes, speaking up about wrongs, responding to them in the present. That's compassion. Those are compassionate actions, right? To ignore a past fault, culturally, communally, individually, is not helpful. That only compounds it if we ignore it. We have to look for truth-telling, and we have to look for a loving response. And shifting, this is one of the shifts from Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. The compassion is making that shift of saying, let's look at the history as it happened, not just a glorified whitewashing literally and figuratively of what our history is, right? And this is where we come from the wide to the narrow, and where I go back and forth. right? From present, from historical, cultural, to our personal lives. The words we use to describe a national holiday, tomorrow, some of you may be off or not working, or if you're working for the government, you may be off for other reasons. But the words we use to describe this day, this weekend, that has power. That has power, right? The power of language. And I picked these two pictures very specifically because language helps define what our reality is. And this, I thought, even more interesting is that if you ever look for images on the internet, I hope you come with a critical mind saying, what do the people look like whom I'm seeing in my images? And when I search, I try to keep a critical mind, and yet it's so easy for me to find pictures of white people and much harder to find people of color. The white person, figuratively, is defining language. Take that as you will, right? And in this fashion, I want us to think about language, think about where it intersects with ourselves, think of where it intersects with the indigenous people of this land. Because we interact with words, we interact with places of things which have been adapted or changed or copied over from languages which were here before our language and before our understanding. So take a moment to think about what names of places or states or cities or areas or institutions you know that came from native languages. And when you're ready, actually, I want you to come forward. I'll put it in the center. Come to the center. Share the name or names you have. If you know the original meaning, share that. And the language, if you know that also. And it's okay not to know. Let us remember with compassion. And online, you can type or chat, and our tech people will let us hear you.
On Friday, Linda and I drove up to Waupac Inn. Waupac is an Indian name. And we drove by Lake Nockamixon, another Lenni Lenape name. I went to Tamanend Junior High School. Tamanend was a Lenape Indian chief, very well respected, and actually the person who Tammany Halls were created for all over the country. And Unami Creek is one tributary to the Perkiomen, both Lenape names. So all around us, we're surrounded by names that came from the Lenape.
To echo that, I had to look it up because I wasn't sure, but the town that we live in, Skipac, is also Lenape, and it's Still Waters, which describes the Skipac Creek that goes right through Evansburg State Park and other parts of our town.
One I know of too in the area is Conshohocken, but I had to look up the meaning. It was from the Unami language, and it means elegant ground place.
I live on Keokuk Road, which trying to listen to people pronounce it when they have to read off my address is ridiculous, but I'm right near Iroquois, there's Cherokee, I think, all in this development. And I have to say, I heard years ago someone say, yeah, call it, name a street Elm Street, after the trees that you cut down to make the street, you know? And I feel the same way about naming this development after you know, the Native Americans. Not sure what the purpose was. If I knew, it might be more honorable than I think it is, but kind of gets to me.
Anybody know where the word Canada comes from? Comes from Canada, that's a pretty obvious thing. Jacques Cartier, the French explorer who discovered a lot of Canada, was in around what is now Montreal, and he heard the native people talking about Kanata, K-A-N-A-T-A, or Kanata, which meant village or collection of huts. And he, of course, misinterpreted that as the name for the whole region. So there's still a suburb of Ottawa called Kanata, where I have some friends living, but that's where Canada comes from. Now you know.
I spent my teen years in New England, Connecticut specifically, and two of the beaches that I used to go to when I was in my teens and my 20s were Musquamicket in Rhode Island and Hammonasset in Connecticut. Now, those are both Indian names. I don't know exactly the origin, but there were Indian names all over Connecticut. There were a couple of community colleges, one very near to me that a lot of my classmates went to, Tunxus Community College. There's also Asnuntuk Community College. There's a Mohegan Sun Casino. There's several casinos there named after Indians. So they are all over New England as well.
I went to Wissahickon High School. So I knew it was an Indian name, but I just looked it up. It's Lenape, and it means catfish stream, something like that.
Hi, my name is Sherry. I'm visiting back for the second time. Happy to be back again. But many decades ago, my husband Douglas and I, we lived in Richmond, Virginia. And there was a big parkway that went around Richmond. And I'm going to spell it for you first. It was P-O-W-H-I-T-E. And, you know, the word white was at the end of this word. So not being familiar with the Indian name or the origin, you know, when I first moved there, I'd be like, oh, you know, you take the Po White Parkway, you know. And of course, I later learned and was soon corrected it was a native Indian name, but that just shows you, you know, the power of knowing origins and respecting culture and the language. And, you know, I never made that mistake again, but it also showed my bias as a young person and seeing the word white and just assuming that's how it was pronounced. So I learned a very valuable lesson in, you know, protecting culture, learning culture, and correct pronunciation. It's Powhite. Powhite. Yes, thank you for asking.
When I was a tadpole, my family used to go to a lake in southern Massachusetts called Lake Chagagag Manchagagag Chubunagungamog, which the locals called for short Webster Lake. But the Indian name was, I thought, much more interesting. Chagagagag Manchagagag Chubunagungamog means you fish on your side, I'll fish on my side, and no one will fish in the middle.
Oh, I just want to say, I think your area is called Mingo, right? Yeah, Mingo is also an Indian name, so that's like the whole thing.
Sounds like Native American Day. I come from Pittsburgh, where the Allegheny meets Monongahela and becomes the Ohio, and I guess was a great place for Native Americans. Anyway, I was raised along the Allegheny, which means fine stream, and I went to school, excuse me, along the Monongahela, which means falling banks, which refer to an instability of the riverbanks, okay? I am Greek, I am Polish, my parents were first generation Americans, and unfortunately, they at that time, people wanted to be Americans, so I learned nothing. But they only spoke to their relatives in Polish and Greek, so I know nothing of my languages.
Thank you all for sharing. There's also Wawa, which means goose in the Ojibwe language, Maniyunk, place we go to drink. I thought Perkiomen was interesting too. Perkiomen is where the cranberries grow. Yeah. And remembering is a type of compassion. And sometimes we forget as individuals or as communities, right? Oh, I know that is a native word, but I'm not sure. Or the ones that we do remember, is like, is it actually that? We don't know if that's the actual meaning, if it's shifted and changed over time, right? And there are words and places which have lost their past names, their past identities. We may know the words, but the meaning is gone with those who have gone before. And remembering, in learning, we give compassion. As I learned something new actually in the planning for this worship, I have a worship gathering every month, and you're always more than welcome to join me in searching and delving and saying, what about this idea? What about this? Or have you thought about this? And I learned something about a language which I had no idea existed. In the prelude, Fjorch, which is the rapper, he uses some American Sign Language. And if we continue to watch that video, or if you look at it later online, he will teach a few signs in the video. But there's a much older signing language which native people used here before ASL, which is American Sign Language. I didn't know this. Now I do. This was a system of speaking across the myriad languages which people held, right? You saw in the video, like all these different tribes, they didn't speak the same language, but they had hand speak, which surpassed these, which they used a system of speaking across these languages, and it was used for cross-cultural, cross-tribal communication to negotiate peace treaties, to engage in trade, to make connections across these language barriers for any reason that you may communicate with someone, right? And it's called hand talk. And it was used both by those who could hear and those who could not hear. And so our musical reflection right now is Count on Me by Bruno Mars with a rendition of hand talk. So please share with me Count on Me in hand talk.
If you ever find yourself lost
I was researching a little bit. Sheila brought this hand talk and the video to my knowledge, but I was researching a little bit online, and on the Wikipedia page, there's a very interesting historical video, I think from the 1930s, of a number of different tribal leaders or representatives gathering using hand talk, and there's a military man who is sort of a white man coming in trying to gather them together, who is interested in hand talk, and so he speaks over what they're saying. But it's very interesting to see them coming together, and they probably do not speak the same language, but they're using the same language to communicate. So there's more information if you want to engage with that with your heart and with your mind. That's where our compassion comes in. And interestingly, I do not know ASL, but there are words borrowed or used from hand talk into ASL, just as in the spoken language of English, there are words taken. And when we were thinking of native words in this area, many of those words were from the Lenape language. And that was the group of people who lived here before William Penn arrived and sort of made the way for European settlements. This is a 1771 painting by Benjamin West, showing a famous meeting titled Penn's Treaty with the Indians. I mean, even that title shows you, just take history in context, right? We need to look at who's the important person. Oh, it's William Penn. They're Indians. Okay. This is, I mean, it is just that. It's a group of Quakers represented by William Penn, signing a treaty with a Lenape group represented by Chief Tamanend, who Preston talked about earlier. This is called the Great Treaty, Penn's Treaty, the Treaty of Shackamaxon, and also known as the Treaty of Friendship, was signed in 1682, late October, and beneath, as the story goes, a majestic oak in Shackamaxon, which is present-day Fishtown in Philadelphia. So possibly this is an oral agreement. This pact was one of the very first made between people who were here and native and settlers who came here, and it helped give some legitimacy to our fledgling country. So there are a number of things happening here. Right, there's like, oh, I want legitimacy for this new country. Oh, I want to have an agreement with the people who already live here. And in the treaty, as far as we know, from what we've heard, the two parties were on very, very good terms. William Penn promised to live with openness and love, and as one flesh and one blood. And Tamanend is quoted as saying, "We will live in love with William Penn and his children while the sun, moon, and stars endure." How different to others who came looking only to subjugate and defeat. The Treaty of Shackamaxon is remembered as one of kindness, one of mutual respect. But, sadly, the next generation ignored both the specifics and the heart of this agreement. The Lenape people were pushed from the land, and very few of their descendants remain here. If you remember learning about the walking purchase, I don't remember this treaty, learning about this in school, but I remember the walking purchase. But William Penn's sons said, oh, well, as far as a man can walk in a day. And the Lenape said, that sounds fair. And then they went and hired some like ultramarathoners, like, go. I was like, so continued treaties, agreements, broken either specifically or just in the idea of it. And this is where we need to remember where we need to remember the positive and the negative in our past. This is how we need to respond with compassion. So if you're able, visit the Penn Treaty Museum or take a walk in the Penn Treaty Park in Philadelphia in Fishtown. There's a statue there. The elm or the oak is no longer standing. It had been until 18 something when there was a, I don't know if there was a natural disaster where it fell, but there's a museum, there's a park. You can learn more about this. We can't fix the past, but we can remember it. We can learn from it. We can move forward with compassion. We can move forward with open eyes. And this is my charge, is that by viewing the past, we see the human potential for greed and hate. We see the human potential for care and love. And so we work toward compassion. We work toward that care and that love. Let us reflect on this a little bit by singing Building a New Way. It's still in that teal hymnal, You May Rise in Body or in Spirit, 1017, Building a New Way. Morning.
I have my Taino rattle with me today, and it's now time for Matters of the Heart, a time when we bring to the fellowship and to our friends the joys that we carry with us and the sorrows and weight that we carry with us when we come here. So I invite those who wish to come up and introduce themselves. And let us know what's happening with you and what is going on in your life, whether it be sorrow, joy, or something in between.
We will bring this time of sharing to a close. As typically, we're going to sing Spirit of Life, and the words and lyrics will show up on screen for you in just a moment.
Okay, I'd like to do a brief reflection honoring the Taino Nation of Puerto Rico and parts of South America. I had the good fortune of being part of a Taino spiritual circle for approximately a decade. We did sweat lodges, we honored the full moon, the solstices, the equinoxes, and they were a coastal people for the most part. So a lot of their sacred objects were made from shells. And this is a rattle that I was gifted with by my teacher, Miguel Segay. I had the good fortune also of being given by spirit chants that came to me. And I will tell you that since I didn't make choir, I'm not sure if it's such a great idea if I should sing the chant. However, all right, okay. So with that said, other people have to sing it too. And it's a four-sentence chant, it's very short, and we'll just repeat it a few times. These are the words. I am an evolving soul. I see the earth as a whole, meaning W-H-O-L-E. And as I drink from the cup of life, so I nourish the earth as a whole. And this is appropriate for today because we take from the earth and we give back, and we take from our fellowship and we give back. So now I'm going to attempt to give this chant. I am an evolving soul. I see the earth as a whole. And as I drink from the cup of life, so I nourish the earth as a whole. I am an evolving soul. I see the earth as a whole. And as I drink from the cup of life, so I nourish the earth as a whole. Thank you.
Words are good and words are powerful. But actions are where our proverbial faith, the proverbial rubber hits the road, where our faith goes outside of these hallowed walls. And ours is a religion of thinking. We love to think. We love to think, oh yeah, what do you think? But also of action. Also of action. And so in our final shift back to our personal lives, I want to bring compassion very close. And if you know me, which many of you do, I am big on embodied faith, on living our values, Like, hey, you believe that. Okay, so how do you live that? And every month in our newsletter and often in worship services, I talk about a spiritual practice. I bring a spiritual practice that says, this is one way you can practice this aspect. You can practice this throughout the month. And this month, for October, our practice is to put a rock in your pocket. What? That's not a practice. That's just putting a rock in your pocket. These are ways to put our faith into action. And I have rocks that we're going to pass around. So you can each take a rock to put in your pocket. And I've been holding this in my pocket, and it's amazing what a difference a little stone can make. And I've given out objects before, if you remember other services, seeds, money, pieces of paper, even stones. But these are a little different. These stones are a little bit different because the ones I've given out before were nice and smooth. These I picked specifically to be small and rough. I mean, pick specifically. I didn't like go sorting through stones. I just grabbed small and rough stones, right? That's so that they're going to fit in your pocket, that it can be a personal thing. People don't have to see that you have a big rock in your pocket. This is for you. And it's so that you won't forget that they're there, right? The practice is to carry a rock with you for the entire month of October or more. You don't have to end at the end of October. And let it act as a reminder to cultivate compassion at times when I forget to be kind. When you forget to be kind, you're like, what is this thing in my pocket? Oh my gosh, yeah, that's right. Be kind. Be kind. Touch the stone, try again. At times when we're not sure how to act, feel the rock and choose compassion. See if this constant reminder makes a difference in how we interact with ourselves, how we interact with the world around us, with other people. These rocks, they're not just rocks because of rocks. Oh, here we go. Yeah. It's from a Christian story of a whole group of people gathered around a woman who was accused of doing something immoral. And the people said, let's stone her, let's throw these rocks at her. And Jesus famously said, let the one among you who is without sin throw the first rock. And all the people gathered like, right? They all walked away. No one threw a rock. So the reminder, not only that we each make mistakes, right? That's one of the reminders, but the reminder also that we can choose how we respond in any given situation. It's easy and it's really hard. Just like the beginning of the service, it's easy and it's really hard, right? Whatever someone else has done or been accused of, whatever we have done or whatever we have been accused of, we do not need to respond with violence or hatred. We can always choose how to respond. And the rock in our pocket reminds us, it's not comfortable. Faith is sometimes uncomfortable. Faith is sometimes challenging. I want a nice smooth, one of those, you know, those one of like glass bath beads. We have some in our bathroom. I want one of those so I don't notice it. Oh no, that's not the point. This is our reminder, my reminder to choose compassion. So we remember, right? We remember, we learn, we strive for compassion. Our last hymn actually is in the gray hymnal. So if you want, you can grab a gray hymnal. The lyrics will be on the screen. It's We'll Build a Land. And as we're singing or after we're singing, I encourage you to get a rock to put in your pocket. If you think you might need more than one, we have enough. If you need more reminders, put a couple in your pocket. Take one for a family member. With compassion, don't just say, hey, you need to be more compassionate. Say, hey, I have this idea that I'm doing. Do you want to join me with it? There are enough rocks for everyone. So let us sing, you may rise in body or in spirit and pass around the rocks. We'll build a land.
Rock of ages.
Rock of ages. That would be a good one.
Thank you.
If you are joining us virtually and want to come later to take a stone, I will have this in my office. If anyone here loses or needs another stone, I will have this in my office. There's also nothing special about these stones. Feel free to go outside and get something small, but something you can't ignore to remind you. From the Ojibwe people. Grandfather, look at our brokenness. We know that in all creation, only the human family has strayed from the sacred way. We know that we are the ones who are divided, and we are the ones who must come back together to walk the sacred way. Grandfather, Sacred One, teach us love, compassion, and honor, that way we may heal the earth and heal each other. Amen.